The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Lowe's knows how to help you save. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select Maytag laundry appliances. Plus, get an additional 10% off when you buy two or three select major appliances. And when you buy four or more, you'll save an additional 20%. Find the right appliances and features that fit your home's unique needs and style. Shop Maytag 4th of July deals at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.
It's time to wake to sleep with Sleep Science Today, where we learn to sleep well with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio.
Welcome to Sleep Science Today, the show where we talk about sleep and the science behind sleep. My name is Andrew Kolsky. I'm your host. And today we're going to be talking about AI. Everybody wants to know about AI these days and sleep data. So we have a guest, Colin Lawler. He is founder and CEO of Sleep Score Labs. Colin, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Andrew. Delighted to be here and delighted to meet you.
Great. So this topic is very, very timely. AI is everywhere, and it's in everything that we see. Sleep is becoming a big issue these days, and you've managed to kind of merge the two. So tell us, where did the idea come from? What does your company do? Give us all the background.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I guess my own background goes back maybe 15 years here. And I met a bunch of people in Dublin, Ireland, hence the Irish guy on the podcast. And those people were developing technology to actually measure sleep at home. Mm-hmm. I was immediately intrigued because, look, at the end of the day, if you want to improve anything, you have to be able to measure it. So the key is to measure it at home. There is a hugely important role for the sleep lab to play, but we just don't have any way to get everybody into one. And even when we do, we just get a single night of data on what we need to see our trends. So way back then, I joined a startup called BianchiMed, based in Dublin, Ireland, developed the world's first non-contact technology for measuring sleep. And from there, we grew and we developed our core technology. We sold it to ResMed, the global leader in sleep medical devices for people with sleep apnea, for example. And then we spun out a separate company 7 years ago called Sleep Score Labs. And our mission is pretty much this. 4 billion people wake up tired every day. And it's a multifactorial problem. For some people, it's behavioral. It's just some adjustments in their personal lifestyle will help. For other people, it's environmental. The bedroom's too hot. Air quality is an issue. The temperature, anything else, the bed that they sleep on, all of these things have a big effect on their quality of sleep. Other people actually really need to see a sleep doctor because they actually have an undiagnosed sleep disorder. And the bottom line is many people also need multiple things because no one solution is going to solve sleep for everybody. Mm-hmm. Based on that, solving it is going to require an understanding. And that's where we kind of came from with Sleep Score Labs. It's about understanding how people sleep, measuring that in great detail and over time, and then using data to understand what interventions have what effect on people's sleep, and then combining those two things so that we can guide each person in a highly personalized way towards better sleep. And so essentially what we're doing is we're using very, very large amounts of data, data which is collected from how people sleep, in their homes over, in some cases, years. In my own case, more than a decade. And then what can we use that data to understand their sleep and then test interventions, which we have now run very extensive studies, more than 230 separate studies on sleep interventions, so that we know what works for whom. Combining those two things is what sleep AI is all about. And the AI part of it is really, really interesting because everybody's talking about AI. And yes, you can put a question into ChatGPT these days and get a reasonably good answer. But the truth is that you can't necessarily trust the answer because it's not necessarily grounded in the data and the science. And so we believe really strongly that AI has the power to turbocharge what we're doing. But at its core, we have to use clear scientific principles in everything we do. And we have to make sure that there are guardrails around the AI itself. Right. And so that has been a big part of what we've been doing. So it's about using AI to bring solutions which are proven to be effective to people in a more personalized way, but at the same time, not trusting the AI to make those decisions. You have to build frameworks and you have to have expertise. So in that kind of space, it's really about very, very large amounts of data. In our case, more than 725 million hours of data as of today. But also, it's also about, okay, running the data and understanding what affects those people's sleep so that you can learn and then make more personalized recommendations to more people. So that's the thought process, sleep AI, improving sleep, leveraging data and science.
So there's a lot in there, but let me stop you for a second here because I want to make sure that I set the parameters so that everybody knows what we're talking about here, because I'm very curious myself. So what I mean by that is right now, today, if someone is a sleep patient, there are people who go into a sleep lab where they get polysomnography, and that's where they're going to spend the night in. They're going to get hooked to all these machines, gather all sorts of data. So there's one source of data that we get. Second thing is we have people who deal with insomnia, and they may be keeping a sleep diary. So there's a second type of data. Then you have all of these wearables, nearables, you know, all these airables, all these different things, and those are collecting data. But one of the big issues in the sleep industry is that when you get into the wearables, for example, the Apple Watch and the Garmin and the Fitbit and whatever, those companies keep their data proprietary, at least from the sleep researchers they do. And nobody knows exactly how they're calculating it or exactly what the numbers are. So there's a lot of sleep data out there, but there's no core agreed upon principles of how to measure it, at least from what I understand. So can you explain a little bit more, how do you get relatable data that matches?
Oh, I love this question. And let me start with where we came from. So we built a technology which operates, as I mentioned, using RF radio frequency waves. Okay. And then basically it's a nearable, it's a device that sits beside your bed, measures biomotion. And by measuring your breathing and measuring your body movement, we interpret that information into sleep information. Okay. Now, you can only do that very well if you have actually collected the data in a very, very large number of polysomnography studies, right? So as we know, people who are older sleep differently to people who are younger. People with disorders sleep differently to those without. People with subclinical threshold issues sleep differently to people who don't have those. High BMI, low BMI, gender, there are huge differences. In order to have robust algorithms for any sensing technology, well, you're just going to have to actually line your technology, your sensor, up against very, very large numbers of polysomnography studies. The bottom line is that most companies can't afford to do that and don't have the time to do it. Think about it. Thousands and thousands of nights of parallel data being collected in all of those types of groups and subjects in multiple sleep labs in multiple countries around the world. It's a big, expensive research project, and only a company like ResMed could actually fund it, which they did. What that meant was we built a core algorithm which is very, very robust and very reliable, not only for young, healthy sleepers, but for everybody, right? We then built a second technology, which is called sonar technology. So what I'm doing is pointing at the speaker and the microphone on your phone. Now I want you to think about a bat navigating in a cave. So a bat cannot see, but yet it doesn't crash into the wall. even though it's moving at speed and it can't see. The reason for that is it's emitting a small sound, and that sound is reverberating against the surface, and that helps the bat to navigate. Using the same principle of echolocation, we have technology that converts any smartphone into a biomotion sensor, which then uses the same proven algorithms. So we took those two technologies and we published the hell out of them. We researched them from top to bottom. And as of today, they continue to be the most published, most researched, and most respected consumer-grade measurement technologies. Mm-hmm. We're not trying to replace the lab. What we're trying to do is to reach more people who right now are not even going to the lab. And the best way to do that is to collect the data at home. So once we did that, we collected a massive data set, and then we opened up our platform to data from all wearables. So as of today, we're collecting data from 600 or so wearables, and we're in a position to assess the relative strengths and weaknesses of each of them because we have vast overlapping data sets. So essentially, we're able to normalize that data without just using our AI and our data technology. Now, why does that matter? What you said, Andrew, is spot on. If you wear a Fitbit and an Apple Watch and an Aura ring and a Garmin tonight, you're going to get four different answers.
Right.
That's a problem. So we solve that problem on the back end because we understand the relative bias in each of the systems. And it's not because the sensors in any of those wearables are not good. In many cases they are, but they're operating with constraints, battery constraints, so they can't sample at the frequency they would like. But the most important constraint is they haven't been able to collect the parallel polysomnography data to have robust algorithms in a wider population. And in our view, you need to be able to do that in thousands, not dozens, of nights in labs all around the world. As I said, it's a big project and very few can afford to do that. So our solution basically enables us to understand the relative strengths and weaknesses of the data, no matter where it comes from, so that we can then use it to actually help people. Mm-hmm. Honestly, without AI, we couldn't do that at this kind of scale, right? And that's the thing about AI. It is really, really powerful in terms of its ability to help you extract more value. But you can only do that if you have very, very large amounts of data to train into the model, which you're kind of collecting and you can trust. So that's in a nutshell what we're doing. I'm sorry for boring anybody out there, but it's fascinating because really, when you think about it, 4 billion people wake up tired today. Several hundred million have used a wearable intermittently. Those people know they have a problem with their sleep, but the measurement isn't quite working for them because they try a wearable given brand 1, 2, or 3, and they go to the bathroom or they know they were awake and so forth, and the numbers don't align. And what happens typically is they stop using them, right? The longitudinal nature of the data is important. So we've developed technologies that, as I said, use the active sonar, use the active radio frequency data, or use the data from another wearable. But the breakthrough is we're also able to take other types of data from the phone, which enable us to have a very good idea about how you sleep, even if you did not actively track. And that's the focus. We want to collect data, use that data to understand what's going on with a minimum amount of hassle for the consumer. Right. So we can then have the maximum amount of help for them.
So, you know, again, a lot in there. You know, you're talking about sort of, in this case, I guess, the nearables, the phone or another device near the person measuring things. Some of the biggest issues, I'm going to ask this question and then I'm going to take a commercial break and we'll come back and answer it. But some of the issues I know out there, because we've done other shows on wearables and nearables and all, the concept of, number one, how do you know whether the person is sleeping or just sitting still? Because maybe during the day they're sitting still and they're not actually sleeping. Number two, does all of this include any data from like home sleep apnea tests and things, or is this simply waking and sleeping time? Number three would be the concept of the different sleep stages. Nobody really knows, or at least I haven't heard, of how these devices are measuring these different stages. So I'd love to hear about what your technology does and doesn't take into consideration. But before we do that, I'm going to take a quick break here on Sleep Science Today, and we will be right back with Colin Lawler. Have you ever wondered why you can't sleep well? Well, there could be lots of different reasons. In order to figure it out, I wrote the book, Why Can't I Sleep Well? It includes 150 common sleep questions that are asked and answered, and I provide all of the supporting science and evidence to address each of the questions. I encourage you to get a copy of Why Can't I Sleep Well by Andrew Kolsky. It's available at www.sleepsciencetoday.com.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
The station that makes you feel good.
Okay, welcome back to Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. We left the break with a question for Colin about your technology. Can you fill us in on, tell us all about the things that it does and doesn't measure?
Yeah, absolutely. The first thing, and the most important thing we believe is to focus on wake measurement. And this is where many devices struggle for obvious reasons. As you said, if you're using a traditional actigraphy-based or accelerometer-based device on your wrist and you're watching the TV and you're very, very relaxed, it's not a horror movie or something, then it's very easy for those kinds of algorithms to mistake a wake period for a sleep period. So that data is helpful but not sufficient. And so the technologies we developed combined accelerometer information with respiratory information, because that becomes interesting, right? So when we are awake, we typically have a respiratory rate which is slightly more elevated, and as we fall into sleep, it slows down. And then for each of the sleep stages, the respiratory pattern behaves differently, as does the body movement. So at a very simple level, in light sleep, for example, we still often twist or turn or kind of have a little shock or move. Everybody on this radio program will remember a time when they were just about 5 minutes in bed and then they had a sudden shock and they just kind of felt like they were falling off a cliff or something. So these kinds of movements happen during light sleep usually. And the respiratory pattern slows down, but not to its deepest, lowest, and most systematic. when a person goes into deep sleep, well, the respiratory pattern is then its deepest, slowest for the entire night. And during that time, there's limited, if any, body movement. But then we go into REM, and in REM, respiratory pattern is highly unstable, but there's no body movement, except if you've got a REM sleep disorder. So what happens often then is you're in a dream state. Your brain is experiencing lots of different things. One moment excitement, and next moment fear, and next moment happiness. And our breathing responds to how we feel, right? But because we're in sleep, the body protects itself by freezing all body movements. So essentially, using actigraphy and respiratory pattern, we basically have algorithms which look at every 30 seconds all night long. Number one, are you awake or are you asleep? Mm-hmm. And then if you are asleep, then we begin to calculate, okay, what the stages are. Now, that is never going to be as good as EEG, you know, brain sensing, because that is the gold standard. But the bottom line is we can't get 4 billion people to use brain sensing every night.
Right.
Now, nobody wants to do it. So what we're doing here is we're using the best available combination of data to understand the best possible picture and use that essentially at the top end of the funnel to begin to stratify people into the next steps for them. Now, how does that help when it comes to apnea? We are not measuring apnea directly, although we're delighted to see more and more wearables are. So we don't measure directly, but our patterns indicate to us very clearly when we see types of behavior during sleep from our systems, we have a pretty good idea when there's a risk of apnea or not. And we also basically are doing the same thing with insomnia, and we've published papers coming on that very shortly. So across the spectrum, essentially we're using that data longitudinally over a long period of time to understand what's happening with a person. But it starts with, for every 30 seconds, were you awake or were you asleep? And we think that's the most important thing to be able to do in order to understand what kinds of issues a person might or might not have. So that's what we do with our data. And then because we have data coming from wearables, and you're right, they each have their own algorithms. Many have a single published paper, maybe two. And when you look at those papers, you'll typically see that the audience that were measured were young, healthy sleepers. And of course, young, healthy sleepers are actually asleep for most of the time, and therefore they don't wake up as much. So the papers always show very good results. But the truth is, half the population doesn't sleep well, is older, and has other challenges. And that's where, you know, the algorithmic robustness needs to be further developed. So by overlapping the two, we have a pretty good idea about which wearables have better data, which wearables have less good data. Generally speaking, many of the wearables are at least consistent. And that means that we're able to take that data and predict what's really happening, even if the wearable itself is incorrect.
Right. All right. Okay. So I can imagine that there's some people listening to the show that are saying to themselves, this is really cool and this is really interesting. And, you know, it's amazing that we can do all this stuff. But at the end of the day, why does it matter? Who cares? Why do we need all the sleep data?
Yeah, I love that question, and I understand it, but maybe I should have started the conversation here. This is why we do this. At a personal level, my own father was diagnosed with terminal lung cancer, and I was there. I flew back from the States. I was at a conference. I flew back. I was in the hospital the morning that they told him that he had 6 months to live, right?
And gosh.
Yeah, we sat together, and obviously he was very upset. I was very upset. We cried our eyes out. And then a senior consultant came by that afternoon while we were sitting in the room. And on my father's behalf, I said, look, doctor, we know that this is not good, but if we fight the hell out of it, do you think we can make it? And the doctor said, look, if you're prepared to fight, we'll fight with you and we'll absolutely give this a shot. My father survived for 14 years.
Oh, my God. Wonderful.
And a big part of why he did that is because he prioritized sleep from that moment. And from that moment, if he was tired, if that moment he felt ill, if for that moment he was upset, he would prioritize and go to sleep. And he did that, I believe. And now the scientific evidence shows that that actually is a huge contributor to his successful outcome, right? He subsequently passed away, loved him greatly. But the point I'm trying to make is this is very important, right? And I have seen it. And then I look at the data, and the data is getting clearer and clearer and richer and richer. And let me give you a few kind of data points and statistics from recent papers, right?
Yeah, please, please.
One paper published late 2023 in JAMA, the Journal of American Medical Association in Neurology. They basically concluded in a big data analysis that for every 1% of deep sleep which a person age 60 loses, they have a corresponding 27% increase in dementia. So every 1% of deep sleep that you lose, 27% increase in the risk of dementia, age 60, this study was done. Now, what is 1% deep sleep? Well, for many people age 60, that's 1 to 2 minutes, okay? So 1 to 2 minutes can have this effect on your risk of dementia, but it's not just that. It's cardiovascular disease, blood sugar control if you've got diabetes. Pretty much every chronic disease has a high comorbidity with poor sleep. And so what we see now in the data is that every minute matters. And this is kind of, you know, why are we doing all of this? Because we need to understand what people need to do at a personal level to get those minutes back. Don't think about hours. Think about each minute and think about how you can get each minute back. And if you can extend your amount of deep sleep at the age of, 60, and reduce your risk of dementia, you're going to prioritize that minute, right? But what do you do? How do we help you to get the minutes? Well, there's no simple answer. There's a combination of answers, and that's why we do all of this, because the data is what tells us, right? The data and the science. And we actually believe that there are many factors, as I mentioned, which is why we are doing so many studies. So, as I said, we work with great companies. We have completed 230-plus sleep intervention studies. So we can understand exactly what product has exactly what effect for which person. And that's the key. So our belief is if we can help people win back minute by minute, then we can change those longer-term health outcomes. But it's not just the long-term ones, it's the short-term ones. A fantastic study done by a team at University of California, San Francisco, 2015 published. Take a little look at it if you get a chance. It basically looked at the relationship between a person's sleep and their risk of catching a cold. And surprise, surprise, the people who sleep less than 6 hours a night have doubled the risk of catching a cold when the virus is introduced than those who sleep well. We know that sleep drives our immune response. And so if our immune system is stronger powered by sleep, we are going to catch less things. I mean, that's the way it is. And a last kind of study, which is even more recent, which I think is particularly important and published in The Lancet, is the concept of chronomodulated therapy. Now, what is that? It's a big, long word. But basically what it means is therapy timed in line with your natural circadian rhythm, right? So it has these studies have shown that if you, for example, are suffering from cancer and your therapy is being administered to you at a less optimum time versus a more optimal time, the difference in outcomes can be between 40 and 60%. I'm not talking about 1 or 2%. I'm talking about 40 or 60%. So now I go back to my other parent. I lost my mother 2 years ago. I know. Also to cancer. And I flew back from the States to take her to her first therapy. And we sat in the hospital in Dublin. And it was scheduled for 11 chemotherapy and then 5 p.m. in a different hospital for radiotherapy. We go to the chemotherapy session. It's delayed, it's delayed, it's delayed. And I was getting very stressed. I was getting stressed because I didn't want my mother to be worried. but I was worried about getting her to the next appointment. I realize now, only now because of the data, that I was worried about the wrong thing. I should have been worried about the time at which she got the therapy. She got her chemotherapy at 4 p.m., right? Mm-hmm. Now, if you're a morning bird and you're getting your therapy at 4 p.m., that's actually going to be less effective for you. At least that's what the data is pointing to. So now we're talking about precision, right? The key to all of this is every minute matters. And if we understand better people's natural circadian rhythm, we will time therapy better to get better results. If we focus on helping the people to get one or two more minutes of deep sleep at the age of 60, we will have better outcomes when it comes to conditions like dementia. And that's why we're doing it. And it requires a vast amount of data in order to answer all the questions which are in front of us. But we strongly, strongly believe that if we measure it, we can manage it, and we can use the data to deliver better outcomes to people. And as I mentioned, 4 billion people are tired this morning. So we've got to do something about it. But the data is critical to all of it.
Right. Oh my gosh, wow, that's pretty amazing stuff. That clearly answers the question of why we're gathering data. I was not aware of all this, and it's I'm thinking to myself and my own practice how this is relevant to, you know, various patients, because, you know, one of the many types of patients that you get who are dealing with insomnia are actually patients who are dealing with maybe a little bit of insomnia, a lot of fatigue from cancer treatment, from chemotherapy. And all of these things become so relevant. So then I'm going to pose the next question and set us up for our next commercial break here. The next question is this. Given the importance now that we understand of all this data and how it does positively and negatively impact us when we sleep better, what does the average person do about it today? What types of things have you learned about that the average person can do? But don't answer yet. We got to take a commercial break. We'll be right back on Sleep Science Today.
Have you ever wondered why you can't sleep well? Well, there could be lots of different reasons. In order to figure it out, I wrote the book, Why Can't I Sleep Well? It includes 150 common sleep questions that are asked and answered, and I provide all of the supporting science and evidence to address each of the questions. I encourage you to get a copy of Why Can't I Sleep Well by Andrew Kolsky. It's available at www.sleepsciencetoday.com.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why My Lowe's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only 6/19 through 6/25. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
The station that makes you feel good.
Okay, welcome back to Sleep Science Today. We're talking about AI and sleep data, and we left with another question, which is, we understand now how data can be so important and relevant to people's health and to their sleep, but practically, what do we do about it? What's available today that people can do based on your learning with all this data?
Great question, Andrew. I'll start as I, you know, begin to think about it. It's really about your own personal data. So let's collect some personal data. You can download the SleepScore app. It's completely free. There is a premium service. You don't need to sign up for the premium service, but for the app, download the app and provided the permissions. If you are using a wearable, it will collect the data from that wearable. If you use the app and the sonar technology, it will measure your sleep very precisely each night. And it starts with, let's get a picture first, because there's no point in trying to solve a problem you don't have. And there's equally no point in not solving one with a solution that's likely to work. So it has to start with the data, as always. Put that to one side. There are, in the research that we've done, we've published, as I mentioned, 90 separate papers over the years about sleep improvement. And, you know, our big data set enables us to mine for insights, which also help to improve understanding. So there are definitely a number of simple things that everybody should consider at minimum, which apply to everybody. But then after that, many things are personalized. So the standard ones to think about is consistency is probably one of the key drivers. So, you know, if you can, try to go to bed at about the same time and try to get up at about the same time every day. That's really important. Our bodies hate change. Our brains hate change. So if you can, try to be more consistent. This is not to say you can't have a night out. We are not purists. There's no point in telling everybody they thou shalt not live in order to sleep better. We really have to have pragmatic interventions that people can use, because that's what's going to get those minutes back we talked about. But definitely consistency is, we can see, a driver of better sleep. The second one, which I kind of pull out, which is pretty common, is temperature control. So it's very clear to us in the big data that the lower bedroom temperatures generally produce better sleep outcomes. Now, we do know that there are people, for example, who are challenged with hot flashes because of the menopause and so forth. So there are obviously mitigations for that. But in general, sleeping cooler is usually better for sleep. So those things we can say are standard for everybody. We have looked at alcohol consumption, for example, and caffeine consumption. You know, each person metabolizes caffeine differently. So in my case, I have restless leg syndrome. I have to cut all caffeine out from 12 midday. So I do. And that has helped me, along with a few other things, to improve my own sleep and manage the condition. But I have a very good friend who sits on our scientific advisory board, and he can drink a double espresso after dinner at 9:30 at night and sleep fine. So it's more personalized. I mean, generally speaking, clearly caffeine is a stimulant. You don't want stimulants before you go to sleep. Right. But again, as I'm saying, it's personal. So we want the data to be more personalized. And, you know, we also know that alcohol, and particularly larger amounts of it, have a very negative effect on how people sleep. That's not to say you shouldn't go out and have a party once in a while. What's wrong with that? But be careful about how much and when. And recognize that on those odd nights, you're going to have a more of a trouble sleeping. But other than those generalizations, we're not the kind of people that say you should never watch the TV, you should never use your phone. Those things, those pieces of advice don't really work for most people. So our focus instead is, what can you do if you want to watch the TV? What can you do to mitigate any negative effect of the blue light, etc.? And I think what you'll find within all of this is, please go to our website, sleep.ai. Please download the app and just peruse through all of the available data and information and publications and so forth. And you can learn a lot, which will help you to personalize your approach to sleep and get better outcomes. The last thing I'll say, which is what we are, our main part of our business is, we put sleep.ai, the platform, into other people's products and services. So if you are, for example, trying to lose weight, a lot of people don't really understand that sleep is a driver of weight gain or supporter of weight loss, because The hormones that help us to regulate our appetites are produced during deep sleep, and a bit like the dementia risk, if you have insufficient deep sleep, it is going to be more of a struggle for you to lose weight. And we know this because I have to travel a lot to Europe, for example, because we have the first and only sleep improvement service, which is fully reimbursed by a government anywhere. And in those trips, it kills me going from the west coast of the US to Europe. It's hard. And when you are jet lagged and you do not have much sleep, guess what? You're hungry and you crave sugar and fat, right?
Right.
That's
right.
What your body craves. But I've realized it's not my willpower or lack of willpower. It's just that I've got a hormonal imbalance caused by poor sleep. So really what we are doing now is we're putting the power of better sleep and evidence-based sleep into the products and services that help people to lose weight, to help people deal with meditation, to help people become fitter and to exercise more, or to help people dealing with a chronic disease. And our vision is you cannot do anything to do with health without including sleep. But if those companies want to include sleep, now they can include sleep AI because it's an evidence-based approach to it, which helps their customers and guests, members and so forth, to get better sleep outcomes and in turn better health outcomes in the fields that they're operating. That's what we've been doing. The last thing I'll say in terms of the future, and forgive me if I'm talking too much, Andrew, but...
No, this is great.
Look, the big picture, if you look at it, in the Western world, Europe, the United States, Japan, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, we put this all together. In this world, we have a clearly rapidly aging population. And due to the success of science, we're living longer, but having many, many more chronic diseases, right?
Right.
The bottom line is the system cannot afford sick care anymore. And so our entire approach to health is to treat people after they become sick. And that's a problem that has to change because we just can't fund it anymore, right? And that is the reason why the health service in Ireland or the UK or other parts of Europe or in places in the US, it's on its knees because they cannot actually service the demand. And so governments and policymakers have to begin to change towards preventing disease from occurring in the first place, right? And we salute what's happening in Germany. The German government are the first in the world to mandate investment in prevention. And therefore, when evidence-based approaches to preventing long-term disease, like in our case, sleep, are become available, the German government are forcing the health insurance companies to reimburse their members for the costs associated with those preventative interventions. There is no doubt that that is the way that we all have to move. And it's begun in Germany. And, you know, with the Dein Schlaf by SleepScore app, also powered by Sleep AI, we completed a full randomized controlled trial demonstrating better sleep and reduced stress with this intervention. And now let's go back. If we can win back millions and millions of people in Germany, just a few minutes of extra sleep, going back to the message from earlier on, every minute matters. So these interventions are really important, and thankfully everybody now is getting how important sleep is. So now we just got to provide to them the evidence, the measurements and the tools and the interventions that actually work for what they're trying to deal with.
Right, and that's, you know, so the timing of all these things coming together in terms of, number one, people becoming more interested about sleep. Number two, people becoming more interested about ways to stave off or prevent dementia if they can. Number three, the way that people can improve their own health in all sorts of things, whether it be exercise, prevention, eating properly, et cetera, these all are together. You can't separate out one from the other. And so, you know, the reason that this radio show exists is because people are interested in how sleep impacts their lives and how they can improve their sleep and improve their life. And so it's really interesting to be at this point in time in history and watch all these things kind of coming together. And again, you know, as a clinician on my side, I see all these things coming in just from what patients are talking with me about and what their level of interest is. So, you know, just everything that you've mentioned, I mention as well. I talk to patients like, okay, you want to sleep better, but if you're eating horribly and you're not exercising and you have all these other bad habits and your bedroom is cluttered and all these things, how do you expect to improve your sleep? It doesn't operate in a vacuum. You know, you got to put it together.
I hear you. I hear you. I'll just say one thing. Let's put the data around it and show people. So let's show them the relationship between their exercise or lack of it and their personal sleep. The data is the key. And if you can see it, you can do something about it. But if it's invisible to you, it's really hard. And people are busy. So I'm an optimist using the data to help people understand how it affects them and what they can do themselves to make their sleep better and show them the results. Don't tell me, show me. I think that's huge, right?
Yep, I agree. Well, Colin, we are actually out of time for today's episode. So this has been chock full of information. I love all this stuff. I love learning about this, and it's so important. So thank you for being on. We'd love to have you on again in the future to share some of the new things that you've learned over time. And let's all, you know, together improve everybody's health and improve their lives. And, you know, Sleep Score Labs, wonderful work. Thank you for being here, and we appreciate your time.
Thank you, Andrew. It was a pleasure. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Sleep Science Today and learning how to sleep better with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio. For more information on how you can achieve better sleep, go to sleepsciencetoday.com. Remember, sleep science today and sleep better tonight. The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.